radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, this month on Campus Firewatch Radio, we have two topics we're going to be talking about. First is Capitol Hill Day 2010. We had a contingent of people down there on Capitol Hill meeting with legislators and their staffers to talk about some of the bills moving through Congress, and great day, really successful. We had over 50 visits with staffers and their members, and in the immediate aftermath, we got some pretty positive feedback because we saw members of Congress signing on as co-sponsors of legislation, which is what it's all about. So we're going to be talking to a panel of people that were part of the teams down there and learning more about it. And then we're going to be switching over and talking with Lieutenant Amy Brow from the Ann Arbor Fire Department, who has, or is in the process of writing an executive fire officer paper on couch fires that start out in the front porches in college communities. And she's been working on this for quite a while, but also, tragically, just within the past few weeks, there was a fatal fire out there in Ann Arbor involving a couch on a front porch. So her paper takes even a more vital use, for not only in Ann Arbor, but also across the nation, as this is a problem that a number of communities are struggling with. So with that, why don't we get right into the show? Well, this month on Campus Fire Watch Radio, we have a panel of people joining us, and we're going to talk about the great day that we had down in D.C. on March 23rd. We had Capitol Hill Day 2010. And joining us, we have Matthew Kuwach, who's the Executive Director of the Ohio Fire Safety Coalition, Nathan Queen, who's the National Legislative Liaison for the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, David Finger, who's the Director of Government Relations for the National Volunteer Fire Council, and Gail Minger, who's President of the Michael Minger Foundation. Thanks all for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time today. So, you know, we had a great day down there. It's the third time we got together on Capitol Hill. Matthew and I have been doing this for several years now. He's kind of been involved. We both have been involved with it from the beginning. And, you know, I'd just kind of be interested in your thoughts on how the day went down there, Matthew.
I think it's always important to get in front of legislators to really show the importance of fire safety legislation that encourages education for students to learn about the basics, really, that have to do with fire safety. I think a lot of the legislators get wrapped up in other things, and it's important to keep it front and center of their minds. And there's a lot of important pieces of legislation that are out there that really do what I just said. And we just got to keep that in front and center in their minds, and hopefully they can do something to help the U.S. public out.
Okay, there were three bills that were introduced in Congress that we were down there talking about. One of them is the Fire Sprinkler Incentive Act, which will increase the speed with which a sprinkler system can be depreciated, which will serve as a big incentive for landlords to install sprinklers in their homes, or not in their homes, but in their apartment buildings. The other one was the Stephanie Tubbs Jones College Fire Prevention Act, which will provide grants for schools to install sprinklers and fire alarm systems in their dormitories, and then a new bill that we'll be talking about a little bit later in more detail, the Campus Fire Safety Education Act of 2010, which will be providing grants to schools to do campus fire safety education. David, I'd like to kind of throw it over to you if we could, since you live down there on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Matthew had mentioned how important it is to get in front of legislators, and we were there with 30 people meeting with 50 different offices. What kind of impact does that have on moving legislation like this through Congress?
Well, I think it can have a pretty significant impact, particularly in this instance, because you and the folks over there at Campus Firewatch did such a good job of getting kind of a diverse group. I mean, I'm a lobbyist and, you know, work for the National Volunteer Fire Council, and we actually support all of these bills generally, but then you bring in, you know, folks with the firefighting background, and you bring in folks who, you know, have some personal experience with losing loved ones in fires, and you bring in different types of fire service professionals. It really makes a huge impact because you're talking to congressional staffers that are really just looking for information they can pass on to their bosses. When you bring such a diverse group to bear, I think it really does a pretty good job. The other thing I would say is, you know, we're talking, generally these staffers are pretty, you know, 1 or 2 years removed from being in college themselves. So a lot of the arguments that we're making on the importance of campus fire safety, we're actually talking to people that know, you know, exactly what we're talking about and know that, you know, this is a vulnerable population and can understand the issues that we're bringing up. So, you know, I think I was in 5 or 6 meetings and each one of them went really well.
Nathan, I'd be interested in your reaction with the people you met and the reaction from the staffers to when you were in there talking about some of this legislation.
Oh, yes, great reaction from the staffers. We didn't have the opportunity to speak with a member yet, but the opportunity was great. And as I was just mentioned, many of the staffers, we had one staffer that did, in fact, have a fire in her dormitory and knew of significant other fires around. And our presence is greatly needed, and the initiative and the anxiety and the support that we're getting all across Congress is great, with the input from in support of the Congressional Fire Caucus and that large membership body. Things should move pretty significantly. And what this also does is bridge that gap of that gap where no fire safety education is presented, and rather than approaching the very young and then on the other end the very old, we're right there with up and coming leaders that could push this out into the workplace quick.
Now, Gail, I know that you've been up there a number of times, and also it's been alluded to that we had a diverse group of people up there, and we did. We had some students. We had, you know, people from insurance. We had people from industry. And Gail, unfortunately, is one of the people that we had on the team who had lost a son in a campus fire at Murray State University. Michael died in a dormitory fire. And having her voice up there is absolutely valuable and adds a perspective to it that just is so unique. And like I said, Gail, I know you've done this a number of times. What was the kind of reaction that you got when you visited several of the offices with your team?
Well, it was very positive. We had, we were engaged with the staffers. We were fortunate enough to be able to visit with a couple of the congressional leaders, which was a surprise. A couple of them I've met before, and they invited me in their office, and we were able to reiterate the importance of the bills and the new legislation that's being put forward. There was one young lady that, you know, she was very busy just organizing their office. And as soon as it was mentioned about Michael losing his life in an arson fire on his campus in his dormitory, she just became very quiet and was totally engaged the rest of the conversation. So that does have an impact sometimes. You know, it's been a number of years ago, but it's amazing to me still how much of an impact that does have, and that people understand that we've made this trip to really talk with them and put forward this very important legislation. And I think that means a lot to them that we do make this effort. So they were all very appreciative and were very positive about getting their bosses to sign on to this legislation.
And as I mentioned, this is really the third time that we've been up there on Capitol Hill doing this, and Matthew's been one of the people who was there from the beginning in terms of organizing it and helping us put it together and such. Have you seen progress each year in terms of when we've gone up there, Matthew, in terms of the successes we've had and just how it seems to be just growing and growing each year?
Yeah, I really think with repeatedly going into meeting with legislators and keeping it on their minds, you may not get it the first time, may not get the second time, but if you keep trying and getting in front of these folks and meeting with them and raising the awareness, raising their interest level as far as making something happen on Capitol Hill, I've seen a very large awareness level in Congress with the legislators that we've met with, and I think it's just getting better and better every time we go in there.
And one of the new bills that was introduced this week while we were up there was the Campus Fire Safety Education Act of 2010, that'll provide $25 million in matching grants to schools to develop and deliver fire safety education programs. And I think we've all come to realize that, you know, that's just such a critical part that is oftentimes missing on campuses. And tragically, just this past weekend, we had a fire out in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where a student was killed in an off-campus fire. Fire started in the couch on the porch and moved into the house. And it's so important that the students know what to do when a fire breaks out. And I know that your organization, Nathan, has been doing a lot of education. So, you know, isn't it so critically important that everybody knows, no matter what stage of life they're in, as to what to do when a fire breaks out?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is a great opportunity to even start a train-the-trainer program where it can continue year after year after year. And not just in September, but throughout the academic year, if we have those students who are doing it, the peer group, yes, this is a great opportunity to keep that awareness going and alive.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, too, that I think I've heard several people mention it here in terms of we're meeting with staffers who are just a few years out, and it's I remember the first time we went up there, it was a little disconcerting to think that a 25-year-old is the one writing the laws of the nation here. but so often, it's important, David, isn't it important to meet really with the staffer versus the member? I mean, it's certainly nice to shake the hands of a senator or a representative, but the real work's done by the staffers when it comes to a lot of this, isn't it? The legwork sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I used to be a staffer in my younger days as well. The members are running around all day. They have very little time to spend paying attention to, you know, individual issues until maybe the end of the day. At least that's what my boss did. He'd come in around 6 or 7, and then everybody'd go in and brief him on all the various meetings that they had. And he'd take recommendations, and that was actually how the office operated. And I'm guessing a lot of the congressional offices operate the same way as my old boss did. The staffers are bright, they're energetic, and they're there to take these meetings and to, you know, make memos on these bills. And the memos that they write are often going to determine, what that member of Congress or that U.S. senator decides, whether or not they decide to co-sponsor, whether or not they decide to vote for the bill. I think it's a mistake. A lot of times people go in and they see a younger person in that position, and, you know, they kind of feel like they're getting blown off. What they don't realize is that the congressman or woman, wherever that person is, they probably already have four or five different things on their schedule at any given time. And so the fact that they're not necessarily in the office meeting with you doesn't mean that they value you any less. It's just, you know, there's a lot of demands on their time.
I mean, even just the simple things, too. I happened to be with Gail when she went in to meet with Senator Brown's staff, or the new Senator Brown here from Massachusetts. And we had the luxury of meeting out on their balcony overlooking Congress, which was quite nice. But you've had meetings out in the hallways as well, haven't you, Gail?
Yes, I have. And at first when that happened, I thought what was just being said about, you know, thinking that it wasn't important or that they really were just blowing you off, and that isn't the case at all. They have very little space. It's crammed full of other staffers working on other issues, and it was just amazing. And now that I understand that or have, you know, in the past couple of years, it's just a pleasure to meet with them, and they are very busy and have a lot on their plate, but the fact that they are engaged with you and really do listen. And I think also that was already mentioned, their age is very important dealing with this issue, because they're just recently out of college, and some of these things they observe themselves. Some of them, it's like, oh my goodness, I didn't think about that. And so it really does stir them to action as well. And I think their age is important, and it doesn't really matter where you meet. It can be kind of comical at times, but it's just all part of it. So, and it's a great learning experience.
And I think, you know, we've all been alluding to, and I think we all encountered it, the situation that we're just one of many organizations up there. I mean, I remember going to lunch down in the Longworth cafeteria, and it was just overwhelmed with all these other organizations up there doing exactly the same thing that we're doing. So it's really important to be, you know, reaching out as much as we can with, and I'd have to believe, and I'm kind of throwing this open to all of you, that, you know, just being an in-person visit versus, it's, you know, email versus a letter versus a fax just carries so much extra weight with them, you know. That was my reaction to it. Showing that we took the time to come up there in person carries a lot more impact than just sending an email.
This is Dave. I would agree with that. I mean, you know, I think all forms of communication are important, and, you know, somebody who can't make it to Washington, D.C., can do an email, can send a letter, but the most effective means of communication is face-to-face, and for, you know, my organization, which is based in Washington, D.C., you know, this is a great opportunity for us to partner not only with you guys, but, again, the various groups and individuals that you bring to Washington to participate in the Campus Fire Safety Hill Day, because I mean, again, face-to-face communication is important, but when you can go in with that diverse group, it, you know, somebody in the group is going to have something to say that the staffer you're meeting with or the member of Congress that you're meeting with takes note of and finds important. And, you know, when you can make that kind of personal connection, it really goes a long way to getting support for the bills.
And, you know, we're really looking at ramping this up for next year. We had some conversations while we're down there, and actually possibly turning this into a two-day session where the students that come down there would, you know, day one would possibly be an education program for them as to how to advocate for change, not only on the federal level but on the state and the local, because really it comes down to people sitting up and talking. That's really what it comes down to. And, I mean, I know that, you know, when Matthew and I did the first launch of National Campus Fire Safety Month out at Kent State, the reaction among the students was very positive, and a lot of, you know, well, what more can I do? I mean, I don't know if you remember back to that day, Matthew, it seems so long ago, but the reaction among the students was just absolutely positive in terms of they wanted to be involved and engaged in what we were doing.
I think so. They recognize the importance once they learn about the value of having good fire safety education, as well as that there is technology out there to protect them, not only notify them if there is a fire, you know, with smoke detection, there's also fire sprinklers that can protect them. So going through the, you know, the myths about fire sprinklers, that they all go off if one goes off, and that they accidentally go off all the time, all that stuff gets taken away once they learn about it, and then they want to get behind educating people. So it's real easy once you talk to a college student to show them that there are technologies out there, but also education that they can learn and be part of, and it can be fun, that they can carry that through their university and throughout life.
And you hit the nail right on the head, because I was just going to say that these are really lessons for life. You know, what we're teaching them, what they need to know about sprinkler properties, smoke alarms, two ways out, cooking safety, candle safety, smoking safety, all those sort of things are things that they'll need to know for the rest of their life, aren't they, Gail? I mean, that's
yes,
you had
they
us
are. It's a captive audience. And to continue with what Matthew was saying, I think showing them through this program of the Day on the Hill that they have a voice, I think that's such a wonderful gift for them to really understand that they do have a voice and can play a very important role in, you know, the things that are important to them. And this is a lifelong lesson. They learned it when they were in kindergarten, as one of the other gentlemen said, that then there's a long gap, and here we are while they're in college. But it is something that they will learn, maybe speak about when they see something going awry, you know, to speak up. I think this gives them the courage and understanding of why it's so important, and they're not just ratting on people. And saving one life, it is all so worth it. And then for them to carry it into their own homes when they become homeowners and have families of their own, that these are lessons for life, just like you said, Ed. And I think it all is very worthwhile.
Well, we've been talking about Capitol Hill Day 2010, which we had a March 23rd up there on Capitol Hill, and We had a lot of people up there. We had a contingent of 30 people from across the nation, and we've been talking to four of the team leaders that were involved in that project. Matthew Kuwach, who's the executive director of the Ohio Fire Safety Coalition, Nathan Queen, who's the national legislative liaison from the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, David Finger, who's director of government relations from National Volunteer Fire Council, and Gail Minger, who's president of the Michael Minger Foundation. And I really want to say thanks to all of you for taking the time, not only when we're up there on Capitol Hill, but also to kind of fill everybody in on what we did here. And I hope you all be joining us next year when we're back up there on Capitol Hill again.
Thanks, Ed. Looking forward to it.
Yep. Thanks, Ed.
Okay. Well, my name's Ed Kamel with Campus Firewatch Radio, and if you're looking for more information, look down on the page here. I'll have some links to some additional things about campus fire safety and our day up there on Capitol Hill. So thanks for joining us.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Okay, joining us now on Campus Firewatch Radio is Lieutenant Amy Brow with the Ann Arbor Fire Department. Thanks for taking the time, Amy.
Thank you very much, Ed. It's an honor to be on your show.
Okay. I asked Amy to be on the show because she has recently written an executive fire officer paper on couch fires. And while this is certainly a problem nationwide, it looks like it really hit home just in the past few weeks there in Ann Arbor, didn't it, Amy?
Yes, it did. We ended up having a fatal house fire and where a couch was a contributing cause to the acceleration of the fire. The couch was located on a porch.
You know, we're not going to go into details on that incident because it is under investigation right now. But as she'd mentioned, you know, a couch was a contributing factor to it. And it's an issue that many communities across the nation are facing, many college communities are facing. And several months, or I guess probably about a year ago, Amy had first contacted me because she started writing a paper on this looking for some more information. And she was kind enough to send me a draft to take a look at, and it's coming along pretty good. And I was just wondering if maybe you could fill us in a little bit on what you found in your research there.
Well, what I found in my research in talking to over 100 students in just a kind of brief oral interview with them is that a high percentage of the couches came with the houses that they rented. The couch was already there. Hmm. Which to me was a big indicator, or not an indicator, but an excellent opportunity that that problem could potentially be mitigated if we could get the landlords to clean up the couches before another rental person comes in.
Mm-hmm. And why is this such a popular thing? Why do students... Did you research that and find out why students like to have these on their porches?
I did, and interestingly enough, I even gave them in choices of, you know, that it was a better party atmosphere, because initially going into this, that is what I thought would be their number one answer, and it wasn't. Hmm. The answer really was for comfort, to sit and relax. It was men and women, and I had done the interviews and kept them separate, anticipating different answers, but across the board, it was because they wanted some place to relax out in the sun and enjoy the outside.
Hmm. Now, this may sound like a naive question, but, you know, in your research, too, I guess how big a factor is a couch outside a house in a fire? You know, I mean, we get the combination of the ignition source, and that's another question, too, is, you know, what do you find in some of the common ignition sources? Then how does the couch become involved? And maybe you can give kind of a common scenario of how a fire occurs.
Sure.
And spreads into the house.
Sure. The common scenario is there's a direct correlation with drinking and partying with this type of fire. And whether it's improperly discarded smoking materials that falls inside of a upholstered furniture, a couch, or a chair on the porch after a party, and where it has time to ignite. And then this couch that is on this, in Ann Arbor, the mostly wood porches, starts burning. And the biggest danger of this occurring is, or the, not the danger, but the problem is that it's at night. And it's after all of these kids have been drinking, sometimes heavily. They're in their house. Their front porch now is ablaze. One of the other side effects to an upholstered couch fire is that the polystyrene insides create a liquid pool that travels also down on the wooden porch, and it helps to feed the fire. Mm-hmm. And now it's taken away their whole primary means of egress, because the whole front of the house now is on fire. And the smoke detectors haven't really gone off yet at that point. So that's usually what the scenario has been in many nationwide couch fires that have occurred.
And how is the fire generally detected? Were you able to find out anything on that?
From the research that I've done, a lot of the detection was from a passerby. And in Ann Arbor, that was one of the cases also, that it was detected by somebody passing by and saw the fire. And they go and they try and pound on the doors, knock, whatever they can do to try and get the occupants awake to get them out. Mm-hmm. Which, when the passerby does that, they open up the front door, and that just accelerates the fire that much more. It gives it that much oxygen, and it's a chimney effect going up in the houses.
Now, prior to the fatal fire that you just had, Ann Arbor had made an effort to do a code ordinance change, hadn't it, looking at
yes.
this issue?
Yes. In 2004, the Fire Marshal's Division was approached by a city council councilwoman, and she wanted an investigation done to help get this ordinance going. And it failed, and there are several reasons why it failed. One in particular being is that the city council and this ordinance was attempted to be passed in the late spring, early summer months, and that's really when all the kids are not out, the students, college students, have all gone home. Mm-hmm. And a member from the student assembly got wind of this and was very adamant at a city council meeting of how unfair it was that there weren't any students there to be represented in this matter. And they felt that, and they were very boisterous about it, they felt that they were trying to get this ordinance passed quickly so that the students wouldn't be able to have a say in it. And the students felt, the ones that were there being represented by the student assembly person, felt that it was more of a blight issue, and that's why city council was trying to get this passed.
Well, now, in talking to your fire marshal out there, I understand that looks like it's starting again, the effort to change the ordinance.
It does. It does. And I am hoping to be a part of that in working with the city and coming up with a better way to handle the situation.
What are some of the differences changes you're looking at doing this time versus the last time in passing the ordinance?
Well, in my research, I found that there were several avenues that could be taken. One, and I'm not sure if this will be what city council will want to do, but is to try and form a coalition with the students, with the Fire Marshal's Division from the University of Michigan, and with members from city council and the building administration and the fire department, to try and, through education, educate the students as to why it's a dangerous practice and to offer options. And one of the options that could be offered is to subsidize a program where they get outdoor rated furniture. Hmm. And whether that could come from, and also the landlords would be a primary part of this coalition, because in a lease, through my research, I found that the landlord has the power. The landlord has the right to say that there could be no smoking. The landlord has the right to say that there could be no upholstered furniture on porches. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to the landlords enforcing that. Mm-hmm. So there are different avenues that could be taken. In the research that I found also is that cities that do have bans or ordinances on upholstered furniture on porches, that it comes down to who's going to enforce it and where's the money going to come from to enforce it.
Mm-hmm. How common are these ordinances in other communities?
Well, they are not as common as one would think that they would be. In the college campus area that I researched, I think I found 14 or 16 of them that I could come up with that actually do have bans. There are other cities that talk about it and that they would like to have it. And I think that basically it comes down to education to the students, and that it's not an issue of taking away their freedom or their rights to have this type of, you know, upholstered furniture on the porches, or even charcoal grills also are a huge hazard too. But it's really for their safety, and to get them to understand that and to get buy-in from them, I think would be huge to eliminating this problem.
Now, obviously, your focus, because of the job you're in, is on fire safety, but you'd also mentioned a blight issue, too. I mean, is that another driving factor on this, a health and blight issue?
And across the country, it is a blight issue. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that if it's presented correctly, that the blight issue becomes at the bottom of the list, mm-hmm. instead of at the top of the list, I would like to think that there would be more buy-in, especially now in Ann Arbor after this mm-hmm. last fire.
And when you were talking to the students, and you'd mentioned that, you know, most of them were really unaware of the danger, did you point out the danger to them, and then did their attitude change, or did they just kind of, you know, poo-poo it off?
No, actually, when I asked them about it, I would allow them to answer the question first because I didn't want to change their mind right off the bat, but then I would tell them, and the ones that were aware, they were poo-pooed about it. They were like, yeah, we know about it. They didn't care. But there was a group of them that once they were aware, you could see that they were thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And I realized then that through education, that thinking might come into action, and they might themselves give up their upholstered furniture on their porches.
Is Ann Arbor doing anything with the university in terms of that education? Are they looking towards how to reach out to them and make them aware of these issues?
That is unclear to me right now, as whether or not that is going to happen. I think that would be a great idea to develop a program that's in place, because right now at the University of Michigan, and talking with their Fire Marshals Division, they don't really have a set program that they use. And one of the programs that's out there is the To Hell and Back series, and they have the special one on college students. Mm-hmm. To develop a program where the freshmen have to sit into that program would be an excellent mm-hmm. start to the education and the realities behind fire safety.
The program you're referencing, it's I Got to Know, and that's one that actually I'm involved with, developing the next level. We're working on the next generation of that right now, and unfortunately it does not have something focusing on the problem you're talking about, but I think it would be an opportunity to certainly get something like that integrated into the program for that outreach.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I'll definitely take back to the People's Burn Foundation, who's actually putting it together, and see if maybe we can get something in there about that. So, well, we have been talking with Lieutenant Amy Brow from the Ann Arbor Fire Department. Ann Arbor just recently had an unfortunate tragedy out there where a couch on a front porch eventually caught fire from looks like possibly careless disposal of smoking materials or something along that line out on the front porch, and took the life of one of the students from the university. And Ann Arbor had been involved in trying to do an ordinance change in the past, and as a result of this is doing a new one, but also coincidentally, Lieutenant Brow had been writing an EFO paper on this topic. So really appreciate you taking the time to join us and fill us in. When do you think the paper's going to be done and available?
I'm hoping to have it done by May 1st.
May 1st. Well, when it becomes available, we'll have a link on the page here. If you look below, you'll see some links to some other information about this problem. And we'll just see if we can try to make changes either through ordinance or better student education. But we really appreciate this information. It's the most complete thing I've seen yet to date on this topic. And really appreciate you taking the time to research it and share it with all of us, Amy.
Thank you very much.
Well, we had a great show here today on Campus Firewatch Radio talking about Capitol Hill Day 2010 and the issue of couch fires on front porches. So there's a lot more information on the page here below if you look at some of the links. And, you know, if you have any questions, please feel free to get a hold of me. You can see the link here on the page. My name's Ed Kamau with Campus Firewatch Radio.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.